The wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands the foolish one tears hers down. Whoever fears the Lord walks uprightly, but those who despise him are devious in their ways. A fool's mouth lashes out with pride, but the lips of the wise protect them. Where there are no oxen, the manger is empty, but from the strength of an ox come abundant harvests. An honest witness does not deceive, but a false witness pours out lies. The mocker seeks wisdom and finds none, but knowledge comes easily to the discerning. Stay away from a fool, for you will not find knowledge on their lips. The wisdom of the prudent is to give thought to their ways, but the folly of fools is deception. Fools mock at making amends for sin, but goodwill is found among the upright. Each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one else can share its joy. The house of the wicked will be destroyed, but the tent of the upright will flourish. There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death. Even in laughter the heart may ache, and rejoicing may end in grief. The faithless will be fully repaid for their ways, and the good rewarded for theirs. The simple believe anything, but the prudent give thought to their steps. The wise fear the Lord and shun evil, but a fool is hot-headed and yet feels secure. A quick-tempered person does foolish things, and the one who devises evil schemes is hated. The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Evildoers will bow down in the presence of the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. The poor are shunned even by their neighbours, but the rich have many friends. It is a sin to despise one's neighbour, but blessed is the one who is kind to the needy. Do not those who plot evil go astray, but those who plan what is good find love and faithfulness. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. The wealth of the wise is their crown, but the folly of fools yields folly. A truthful witness saves lives, but a false witness is deceitful. Whoever fears the Lord has a secure fortress, and for their children it will be a refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, turning a person from the snares of death. A large population is a king's glory, but without subjects a prince is ruined. Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their Maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honours God. When calamity comes, the wicked are brought down, but even in death the righteous seek refuge in God. Wisdom reposes in the heart of the discerning, and even among fools she lets herself be known. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin condemns any people. A king delights in a wise servant, but a shameful servant arouses his fury. Amen.
I'll be honest with you, I struggle with new restaurants. To walk in and be confronted with a menu that's too long by half. The agony of having to decide between so many options. Do I want this? Do I want that? Does it come with chips? Does it not? And don't even get me started on menus that are written in French. That's just unfair. There are always those tense moments, though, aren't there, as the food comes out and you think, oh, I should have had that. That one looks far better than what I ordered. Recently, I've taken to trying to go to the loo before ordering my food, not necessarily because I need it, but just so that I can wander in between at different people's tables and try and see what looks good, what other people have decided to eat. Maybe that's just me, but life is full of decisions, isn't it? Full of big decisions and little decisions. Big decisions we can agonise over for months, where to live, what career to pursue, if and who to marry, which church to go to. But the funny thing is, for all our fretting, we can't even decide what the big decisions are going to be. We might spend months wondering where to go to study, but then that quick decision, that small decision, just to bob into the shops for 5 minutes, could end in a car accident with life-changing consequences. And that can push us in two different directions. Sometimes it will paralyse us, like myself in the restaurant, wondering, not being able to make a decision for fear of making a bad decision. Or it can push people in the other direction, towards being flippant. I can't choose the outcome anyway, so any decision is as good as the other. It's a very mundane topic, isn't it? But sometimes that is the glory of Proverbs. It's here to help us with life, to make decisions wisely in a world where of difficult decisions, where it's difficult to navigate. So let's have a look at what Proverbs has to say. We won't be staying exclusively in chapter 14 today, but that's where we're going to start. And maybe as you read, you spotted that we must make decisions. Verse 23 says, "All hard work brings profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty." We've all sat in meetings like that, that spend too long discussing something that they never make a decision. It implies that at some point we've got to make a decision. Like in the restaurant, we can spend all night discussing the menu, but eventually it will shut and we'll be left hungry. As much as we like to put off decisions with our talk and with our procrastination, there is no escape. We have to decide. Proverbs 22 verse 3 even says that not making a decision is still making a decision. It's just making a bad one. It says the prudent sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and pay the penalty. Whereas the simple, the raw recruit, just keep on going without deciding to change, the prudent sees the danger and they decide. They take action. They take refuge. They act on it by planning carefully. Chapter 21, verse 5. "The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty." We've thought about Proverbs being like buoys in the water, which warn us away from dangerous waters. We might also think of them like traffic cones in that way, that keep us out of dangerous areas as well. Yes, we can spend too long talking about a problem, but equally we can rush in and make hasty decisions too. Decisions need to be made, but where they do need to be made, it's wise then to take time and care and to give it diligent thought to come up with a plan. The army have a very distinct planning method called the 7 Questions Combat Estimate, which asks commanders to come up with a plan before they send their troops into battle. The commander are asked 7 questions, questions like, where are the enemy and what are they doing? It sounds ridiculously simple, but I think it will have saved hundreds of lives over the years. Had they had it at the Battle of Balaclava, then we might not have had the infamous charge of the Light Brigade. There's nothing ungodly about planning and thinking strategically. It's not more faithful to leave it to the Holy Spirit. There is a faithful way of making a plan. And now some would say that if you want to give God a good laugh, then just tell him your plan. Doesn't James try and warn us against this kind of thinking? James chapter 4. You who say, today or tomorrow we'll go and do this or that, or to that city and spend a year there, carry on our business and make money. Why, you do not even know what tomorrow will happen tomorrow. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this and that. Of course that's true, isn't it? We're not to pretend to be God by pretending to know what will happen tomorrow. But it's not telling us not to make plans. It's telling us not to make plans without God in mind. We'll come back to that idea later on. But God gave us minds, which we're to use to think carefully, to make plans and make decisions. And that challenges an idea that's popped up fairly recently in Christian circles. I think it's happened because our modern world gives us huge amounts of flexibility and freedom and fluidity about the decisions that we make. We're now asked to make big decisions out of literally countless options which other generations didn't have. And that's quite scary. And so Christians have looked in the Bible to try and find ways in which God will help us to make those big decisions. Maybe like Gideon, who God guided by laying out a fleece. People would say that that's an example that we're to follow. We're to look for signs, metaphorically, of course. Or you might have heard of people having a peace about something as a good sign, or pushing on a door to see if it opens. The problem is that not everything that a character does in the Bible is there as an example for us to follow. There are a number of problems with thinking like that. Firstly, it's a dangerous idea. We can very easily be misled. Signs are notoriously subjective. Feelings often change. Another person might have a completely different interpretation of things. Secondly, it can be used, can't it, to stamp God's seal of approval on a plan that is entirely our own. It's very hard to disagree with someone that says God gave them a sign, or that God is in it. It can be used as a subtle way to shut down wise counsel. Added to that, we have to wonder how these things fit together with 2 Timothy chapter 3 verse 16. All scripture is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting and training in righteousness, so that the servant of God may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. By looking for signs outside of the Bible, we're implicitly saying that the Bible isn't enough. We need another source of revelation, something else to thoroughly equip us for every good work. But of course, that still leaves us with the decision to make. The Bible doesn't tell us what job to do or whether to marry Betty or Flora. And that's right. Where the Bible hasn't given us a right or wrong answer to make, it's down to us to choose wisely. God gives us glorious freedom to make those decisions in a wise and informed way. It gives us a few rules on who we can and can't marry, but huge freedom within those bounds. To be quite frank, God is more concerned with how we care about our spouse than that I necessarily find the right person to marry. God has given us glorious freedom to make decisions without needing fleeces or pieces. We're free to decide. We're expected to decide some things for ourselves based on our preference, based on our situation, and based on a thought-through decision. But in other ways, I can understand that is still quite daunting, isn't it? And that's why it's good news that God doesn't just leave us alone to make those decisions. Proverbs goes on to say that we must listen carefully to advice. At chapter 1 verse 23, for the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me, that's to wisdom, will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. It is the complacency of fools that will kill them. Complacency carries the idea of being at peace or at calm, and compared to verse 33, a lack of willingness to listen, a false sense of assurance that can bung up people's ears. If I assume that I'm right all the time, then why would I need to listen to you for advice? But alongside calling them fools, Solomon warns of dire consequences. Back in chapter 14, verse 12, it says, "There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death." As human beings, we do not always see the right way to go. Not everything that looks good is good. Isn't that one of the fundamental lessons that we learn from Genesis chapter 3? What appeared to be right to Eve proved lethal. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. What looks right might be folly. It might turn out to be the road that leads to death. And so we need to be very careful of following our own advice. To have a healthy suspicion when it comes to our ability to see what is the right path to follow. And so good advice needs to be in place to help us sometimes to see the reality behind the appearances. Chapter 11, 14. "For lack of guidance, a nation falls, but victory is won through many advisers." I was once told the story of the siege of Carcassonne in France. The siege had lasted for 5 years, which is a long time for those inside the city and for those outside of the city, and they were both getting hungry. And so a woman inside the city went to the leaders with a plan. They took their last bushel of wheat and fed it to the last surviving pig. And then they took the pig to the highest tower and they flung it into the enemy encampment. The next day, the siege lifted and the army left. They gave up, thinking, well, if this city is so well provisioned that they can afford to fling their pigs over the walls at us, then they're clearly going to outlast us. I'm not sure how true it is as a story, but often victory is won through many advisers. Taking advice and counsel from people can be very helpful. It's yet another reason why we need to have good friends. As a rule of thumb, the more advice we get, the better our plans will be. What it's saying is that when we're faced with a decision, we need to ask other people about it. Get their opinion, get loads of feedback. Sometimes our critics will be our greatest helpers. They help us to see things in different ways and to spot things that we hadn't. We must listen carefully to advice. But then that cuts both ways. It means listening to it and taking it on board, but it also means weighing it carefully. Chapter 14, verse 15, "The simple believe anything, but the prudent give thought to their steps." Just as we need to be careful about sometimes trusting what seems right to me, we need to be careful about trusting what seems right to other people as well. Listening carefully doesn't automatically mean doing something that everyone advises. Each step needs to be weighed and balanced along the way. Not all advice is good advice. Sometimes it's bent and crooked, and so it needs to be disregarded. There was a website doing the rounds a while ago which was warning against the dangers of dihydrogen monoxide. Traces are already found in every river and stream and lake within the UK, and it can be deadly if we're overexposed to it. The problem is that it was just a parody. Dihydrogen monoxide is just water. Another way of saying H2O. The internet is a wonderful and a terrible place to go to for information. Just by sheer volume of numbers, we will probably find someone who agrees with us, and the temptation will be to use them to rubber stamp our opinion. It looks like we're listening to advice, but really we're not listening that carefully. I know that some of this stuff will seem obvious, and I really hope that it is. We've not said that anything that's revolutionary so far, but that doesn't mean that we don't need to hear it. As I've looked at these passages, more and more I've found myself asking, yes, I know this, but I don't always do it. It's far easier not to listen to advice. And that's partially because these aren't rules that we follow, but they're characteristics that we need to grow in. All of our decisions stem from our heart, who we really are on the inside. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." The reason why we don't listen carefully to advice isn't because we don't know that it's a good idea. It's often because our hearts are too proud to listen. Before we set out to seek for advice, we need to work on a humility that actually listens to it once we've got it. And that will come ultimately from remembering that we are creatures. We have very limited knowledges. We are humans, and God is our creator. Whereas our field of view is very limited and very small. God's is not. He's omniscient. He's all-knowing. He knows all things perfectly. And so when it comes to the question, who should I listen to? Where should I turn to for advice? The best answer will be to the God who made me. He will guide us, and his word will guide us, not always by answering the questions that we're asking, but often by telling us which questions we should be asking. James chapter 1, verse 5, "If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you." Thirdly, and following on from this, we must commit our plans to God. Chapter 16, verse 3 says, "Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans." Now, we need to be careful here as well as to what this is saying and what this isn't saying. Is it a promise of prosperity? If we put in our little prayer, out pops our success. Well, no. We need to read it in context. It comes after verses 1 and 2. "To humans belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord." Verse 3 then is a response to that. Because the Lord rules in verse 1, and he evaluates our motives in verse 2, it would be wise to commit our work to him in verse 3. It's not giving us a way of twisting God's arm by twisting his ear. He's not a fairy godmother. It's more recognizing the way that the world works. It's an encouragement that the faithful need not to fret or worry about their effectiveness, because achievement ultimately depends upon the Lord. If we're rightly related to him, we don't need to be overly worried about it. The New Testament equivalent might be Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God." But what does it mean practically then to commit whatever we do to the Lord? I've already mentioned prayer, but more literally, it reads, "Roll together your work with Yahweh, and your plans will be firm and stable." It's almost like a Swiss roll where the cake and the jam and the cream are rolled together into one unit. God isn't just for Sunday or for our quiet times. He's to be rolled together with all that we do. I once was at a secular meeting about cleaning up the local area, and it felt very odd to me that we didn't start with a prayer or with a Bible reading. And on reflection, I think that's probably quite an encouraging thing. It should feel strange. Not that our prayers should be perfunctory, But we need to establish routine patterns of obedience to God that are mingled together throughout the day, whether that's giving thanks before a meal, or perhaps when we come back from shopping, before we go out to work, or briefly just before entering a meeting. Giving thanks for our day, or before we sleep, or when we wake up. When there's a big decision to be made, either big or small, why not try praying about it? It doesn't need to be a 50-minute prayer meeting, but simply taking the time to recognise that God is God and we are not, and we need his help. But even whilst we do that, we need to be open to the idea that God might take us down a different path than the one we ask for. Proverbs 19:21 says, "Many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purposes that will prevail." That's a challenge not to put too much weight on our plans. People will say and have rightly spotted that decisions have consequences, and we often make unwise decisions. And that can lead some people to agonise over every decision that they make. And ironically, it's not far from what James is warning us against. In James, they were boasting about tomorrow, ignoring God by charging ahead without him. But we can equally ignore God in another way. We can ignore him by forgetting that he's sovereign, that it is the Lord's purposes that prevail. We can try and control our world by controlling our decisions. We can give too much weight to our own decisions, imagining a world where God is not sovereign, but our decisions are. And that's enough to cripple anyone from making any sort of decision. And so one author encourages us wisely to not hold so tightly to our plans that we resent the Lord whenever he diverges from them. I think that's rather neatly put, isn't it? Do not hold so tightly to your plans that you resent the Lord whenever he diverges from them. Of course, holding too tightly to our plans is a form of pride as well. Simply expecting God to conform to our plans and to make our world run as we would like it to. We need to keep on remembering that it is the Lord's purposes that will prevail. If you want a good example of that, then just join Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus, going a little farther, fell to the ground and prayed that if it's possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything's possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." It's clear that Jesus would rather not go through what he knows is coming up ahead. But he doesn't hold on so tightly to that idea that he resents God when he takes him down a different path. In humility of heart, Jesus prays, "Yet not what I will, but what you will." And the same is true of the believer. Our ideas, our decisions, sometimes we will commit our work to the Lord and he won't establish our plans quite in the same way that we'd like him to. And at those points, we need to remember it's okay, because it's the Lord's plans that will prevail. That's particularly encouraging when we read it in conjunction with Romans chapter 8, where it says that we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purposes. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Even when things don't go according to our plan, even when the decisions that we make are not wise and we run into dangerous areas, the good news is that we're not on the throne. God is. And things always go according to his plan. God has not been thwarted. He can use all of them for his glorious ends, to conform us to the image of his Son, to make us more like our brother Jesus Christ. We can never step outside of God's plan for our life. Of course, that's not an excuse for making foolish and sinful decisions, but it might just give us a bit of breathing space to make a decision, knowing as we do that God will surely bring us home. Psalm 23 is a wonderful place to be if we're worried about making a decision. It gives us a perspective on the decisions that we need. We are sheep and God is the shepherd. The shepherd gives his sheep gracious and wonderful freedom to make decisions, but he will shepherd and guide us towards green pastures. He will be with us even as we go through darkest of valleys. In Christ, we are hunted down, not by the shadows of that valley, but we're hunted down by goodness and love all the days of our life. And that is a safe place to live our life, and a helpful perspective as we navigate all of life's difficult decisions.